Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Inquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily, all with the sidecar of sarcasm you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble!
He'll gun it deep downfield for A.J. Green. A.J.'s got it! Touchdown! Bengals! Dalton in the shotgun. Two receivers left, two to the right. Andy straight back to throw. Fires for Gresham in the end zone! Touchdown! Bengals! And Reedy burst up the middle of the field. Look out! Reedy's off to the races.
Let's get ready to
run. All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I, of course, am Paul Daner Jr. here with fellow Bengals beat writer Joe Reedy. Joe, how are you doing?
Doing good, brother Paul. How you doing?
Oh, yes, Father Joe. As this is going to, I guess, sort of be the holy edition of Scribe Session, as we come from the holiest of trips we've ever been on, thanks to our unique experiences in Baltimore, where, you know, you really couldn't have picked a more appropriate hotel than the one that we ended up in beautiful downtown Baltimore. Marriott, you got your Marriott points right down there on the waterfront. But
didn't get the executive suite, though. I'm kind of disappointed.
We were right across from the executive suite. I mean, it was a possibility, but apparently you don't have that kind of pull. I think you need another 50 nights.
I need platinum.
You need. How far you got to go to get platinum?
Probably another 20 nights or so.
You might be able to pull it off.
Maybe.
I mean, if you had to sneak an extra trip in. But let's get back to what's important. So, well, obviously, we showed up in Baltimore, and at the hotel, there were nuns and priests and bishops crawling everywhere. I mean, everywhere you looked was were some clergy. And we're just thinking, what in, well, God's name is going on out there?
And at least we didn't say what the hell is going on
right
here.
No, this was a very holy thing. I mean, this has nothing to do with hell. I mean, it was... So it was the United States Bishops Convention,
the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops General Assembly in Charm City.
Yes, and they were assembling, all right, and they're all right there. And let me just tell you, at the Irish Bar Fleming's and a few of the other places around that hotel, plenty of the sacrament was imbibed by these gentlemen. They're doing it like Catholics know how to. There was no doubt about that.
And us Catholics, we know how to drink.
Well, there's not about it. Gambling, drinking. I mean, just go to a church festival. You'll see pretty much most vices are taken care of there.
No chicken dinners, though, around the around the hotels, or spaghetti dinners, or what have you. Yeah. No 50-50 raffles. Or
I could have gone for a bingo night. I mean, but no, yeah. So just an unbelievable, funny coincidence that obviously it led me to the joke of, okay, so a nun, a priest, and Joe Reedy walk into a Marriott. Now, stop me if you heard this one. To which point, we all unanimously decided that joke does not need a punchline.
No, it really doesn't.
So we have that. And the interesting thing about that was, as we were hanging out in the hotel, you said something to the effect of,
It was tweeted Saturday night.
It was actually tweeted. You can check the timeline. That if the Bengals were looking for some divine intervention, essentially, they'd found that they were in the correct hotel. And I'll be doggone it. If sure enough, less than 24 hours later, divine intervention was needed. So just unbelievable. The Bengals end up losing in overtime 20-17, a score that you predicted correctly, actually.
Yes,
in your paper,
and also on Friday's desktop graphic on Twitter, of which I got plenty of disapproving tweets.
Yeah, You know, you were definitely vindicated. Although I don't think that you probably predicted that it would come in the nature that it did.
No.
So 2017, as you probably know by now, if you are a big enough fan that you're listening to this podcast, the 51-yard Hail Mary caught by A.J. Green in the end zone. And to which point, what had been a pretty very, you know, judicious press, but I mean, people were very calm. It was very much a very professional environment, not a lot of, you know, chitter chatter going on. But when that happened, it was an explosion, like I'm sure any bar around Cincinnati was, of, oh my God! Jim Ross was the only thing missing from that.
To say the least, or just one of those, he caught it. He caught it.
He caught it. Just complete disbelief. I mean, but it was funny because this being the holy of podcasts, we actually feel like we should break out for you because the drive had not gone very well.
No, before it really hadn't.
It really, the Hail Mary masks what was a complete epic dumpster fire of a 2-minute drill attempted before that.
You know, if we had the explicit warnings on this podcast, Paul, I would call it a cluster bleep.
Right. That's a pretty fair description.
Plenty of sins, Paul.
Oh.
Amassed on that drive by the quarterback.
Yeah, 2 sacks. I don't know if the first one was counted as a
sack. It was a scramble.
Technically a scramble, but it was one that ball had to get out. Held onto the ball too long in the next play, and next thing you know, it spiked 2 seconds, and then yoink. Well, I shouldn't explain it to you because we actually have an exact dramatization of the final drive and final plays for you right now. Fireball. I love the fireball right at the end as it comes on. And of course, now, so here on our holy podcast, we bring you the hallelujahs. Oh, Lord, speak the Lord's work.
Paul, you're being a Baptist. You're not being Catholic.
Oh, sorry. You're right. That never happened at my church. I should know better.
You do sound a little bit like the Reverend Jesse Jackson who was in the locker room on Monday.
Unbelievable. I mean, you talk about a theme of the weekend. You stay at the Bishop's Convention Hotel. You have the Hail Mary prayer answered. Jesse Jackson's in the locker room. I mean, something's going on here.
Yeah, and I mean, you did sound a little bit like the Reverend.
Yes, I did. Well, and I should know better. 12 years of Catholic schooling. I want to give a shout out to my St. Susanna Titans up in Mason for the 8 years of Catholic school I got there, and of course, as I have referenced before, I am a strong man of Mohler, so I'm very familiar with the ways of the Catholic Church, which I'm half tempted to just start breaking out old church hymnals for this entire podcast. We're known to do ridiculous things, and I mean, I don't know if you need to break out some Gather Us In, some On Eagle's Wings. I mean, I've got plenty of songs in that bag.
For my baccalaureate mass, when I graduated from Warren John F. Kennedy High School, mm-hmm. we did the opening song where we came in was Gather Us In.
The rich and the haughty. Gather us in, the proud and the lame. I mean, I still remember the words of those songs.
One of my favorite opening church hymnals, Paul, Gather Us In.
Oh, yeah. Everybody, you know what? In case you know what we're talking about, I don't think you've listened to some Gather Us In. Gather Us In.
Gather us in, the lost and forsaken. Gather us in, the blind.
I'm amazed you even found that on iTunes.
Oh, you can find it anywhere. You can find it anywhere. And if I needed to, I'd call it some favors. I still know some people back there. I could call it some Gather Us In favors. I could have gotten a live rendition done by some of the St. Susanna Choir. I still know some people back there.
Now, does St. Susanna have a football team, Paul? If St. Susanna
actually,
does,
it's a good football team now. Although I will tell you, in my lone actual football playing experience came my 8th grade year at St. Susanna, and we didn't score pretty much ever. We had, I believe one touchdown the entire season.
Now, Paul's a man of Moeller.
Yeah.
Kevin Kelly tweeted this to us on Saturday. Probably something you won't be proud of being a man of Moeller. During the Moeller St. X football game, they did play Roar.
Yeah. But you know what? They won 42-17, so you're allowed to play Roar if you want to. I mean, I can't say that I condone that behavior. I'm not going to condemn it either, though. And you know what? All I know is if this is you trying to get Roar back into the podcast.
No. This is a holy podcast, Paul.
We're not going to go and break out Roar gas, as I have said, and I will continue to repeat. The only time Roar will ever be played again on this podcast, or really any Katy Perry for that matter, is if the Bengals are in the Super Bowl. It's the only time we'll break it back out. That's it.
We'll see.
Yeah, well, after the last couple of weeks, I think Katy Perry's looking pretty safe. So let's talk a little bit. I want to bring in. We talked to AJ Green after the game about obviously the prayers being answered on the Hail Mary.
Oh, which song?
Hallelujah, Joe. You always got to make sure we leave the Hallelujah to come underneath when we mention the Hail Mary.
So. That's true. Now, people are probably wondering why we're not using Gregorian chants or anything.
We did that.
We did, yes. Gregorian chants is resolved for the Holy Megatron play.
Yeah. We can't have there be confusion.
Yes.
So when we play the Gregorian chants, we're referring to the Calvin Johnson play, Holy Megatron.
Right.
And now when we talk about the Hail Mary, everything is going to, well, it's more of the Hallelujahs. And
yes.
We might even have some more treats for you get into later. But... So I want to bring in AJ Green, though, who we talked to after the game about the play and also about, you know, general frustration with an offense that hasn't been as good as I think they can be the last 2 weeks. So here's some AJ Green after the game.
I feel like the offense, I know you guys are talking about picking it up like defense. I feel like it.
Yeah, we let them down again. They play great. They play great again, and we continue to let them down. We got to get this better.
Can you put your finger on it?
Oh, man, I don't know, man. I got to go back and watch the film. I don't know.
Is that just one of those things, AJ, the way that Hail Mary was set up, that I'm not going to try to get in a pile and just...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was just saying, God's worry. I ran. I had my head down digging, and I looked up, and the ball was like 5 yards behind me. So I was like, all right, just let Marvin jump and hope and get this tip. So.
I guess the 32, we took the right tweet.
Yeah, exactly. So.
So one of those things where it's like, wait a minute, I can't believe no one else is in that.
Yeah, I can't, nobody around me. So.
Joe, I thought the most interesting thing that AJ said was talking about just feeling that the offense isn't pulling its weight and letting the defense down. And I think we kind of heard that a little bit from AJ before. At the end of his little mini slump that came earlier in the season, some frustration, where he actually showed some frustration in that game. But this is the first time we've really heard anything like it since, and to hear something like that letting the defense down type of thing, you sense the offense kind of looking around at each other, wondering how this is happening.
You hold Baltimore to 189 yards, 2.7 yards per play, sack Joe Flacco 5 times, which Vinny Ray, hell of a game. 3 sacks,
yeah.
Interception, showed up. Very happy for Vinny. Hold Baltimore to 3 of 16 on third down conversions. And you lose. I mean, that's, you know, if I'm the defense, and if I'm Mike Zimmer, I'm a little bit upset because, let's face it, during Zim's 5-plus years here, and there's a lot of veterans here, they've seen this case where the defense is at such a high level and the offense is waning that it's like, oh, Lord, here we go again. And there might be that feeling right now. Miami, not great. Baltimore. Not great. Second half, Andy has had struggles the past 2 years, and it's like, when do you get that consistency on offense? Plus, as an offense, you run 85 plays or more the last 2 weeks, and you lose? That's
It all comes back to one defining factor, though, and it's these turnovers, and it's the difference between what I wrote about in the walkthrough this morning and what we've dubbed good Andy, bad Andy, which has sort of come up in the past. Jay Cutler has gotten a lot of good Jay, bad Jays,
smoking Jays,
but Andy is starting to fall into that area a little bit, because if you look at it in wins, he has a 66% completion, 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. His rating is 101.6. In losses, his completion percentage is 59%. He has 4 touchdowns to 9 interceptions. His rating, his passer rating, and is a stat that has some deficiencies to it, but it's as far as a one single number, it's as close as we can really get without using the QBR ESPN number, is 63.1. 38.5 points less. There's a differential between wins and losses. That is a big number. And that is a guy that is winning or losing you games.
12 turnovers and losses, all but one Andy's responsibility. The interceptions and
fumbles. Yeah.
The only one not his was a Sanu fumble week one against Chicago.
Yeah.
Everything else in terms of turnovers and losses has been his. And that's not good.
The good news is he's been good more than he's been bad, if that's what you're looking for. But
Looking for better.
You're looking for consistency. You cannot have, even in losses, really the Chicago is the only outlier here where he played well and the team lost. And you mentioned the Sanu fumble or a few other plays involved there. The defense kind of let down a little bit. But everything else in this team is very consistent. The defense, for the most part, is pretty stout and pretty consistent. The running game, they would like to get more out of it, but it's been about the same most every week. The difference has been, does Andy throw picks or not?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's it. That's really it. Does he – because everything else seems to be in place.
Well, also sacks. There's
been
also the sack quotient where
– And those go hand in hand.
Yes. Where, you know, this offensive line had done a decent job the first half of the year in the last two games, 5 sacks each. Andrew Whitworth, I mean, the last time he allowed a multi-sack game was I think PFF has 2009, he said, his rookie year. But that just shows how rare some of this stuff is. Mm-hmm. And the line's got to be better. It's got to improve. But I also think the other thing, Paul, when you look at it, and this is outlier in these losses too, the other receivers have not stepped up. Marvin Jones, since the 4-touchdown game, had the 50-yard touchdown against the Dolphins, taken back due to a holding penalty. Sanu, we're all waiting. Where is that guy from last year in November?
Yeah.
I think if you would go most frustrating or most disappointing on offense, it would be Sanu right now.
Agreed.
Everybody, fantasy freaks were coming out left and right, and I use fantasy freaks lovingly. Don't get me wrong. Just please don't ask me on Twitter which player should I. I'm not that guy. I'm really not. Everybody expecting a monster game from Tyler Eifert. He was targeted 10 times. He had only 3 catches.
Yeah.
And we've said this since the beginning of the year. Other receivers and people have to step up. And they didn't do that in this game. And really, AJ can't carry this team. We saw that in 2011 and 12. It didn't work. The other guys have to pick up their end of the bargain, too. And when you're through two games and there still isn't a 100-yard rusher yet, and I don't know if we're going to get close to a 100-yard rusher this year. I think that's a source of concern, too, for me.
Well, I think when you look at it, is it possible, when you mentioned the lack of stepping up from the receivers, in these games that they lose, there is when they fall behind this focus and this overemphasis, in my opinion, on shoving the ball to AJ, which is the when this offense has been at its best, it's been proven all year, is when it is distributing it more to other guys. Is
Week
that
three,
the quarterback,
Green Bay.
Is that the quarterback, though? I mean, is that the quarterback overemphasizing getting the ball to AJ too much? I mean, when he has the most targets, seems to be when this offense is less powerful.
Yes, but counselor, in a rebuttal,
yes.
Week three against Green Bay, Marvin Jones, key touchdown catch, Geo, the screen.
Right.
Other guys stepped up in that week three comeback.
But they
got to
get the ball. They got to get the ball in order for that to happen. I mean, I feel like.
And he distributed the targets well in this game. Now, when you got later in the game, 4 of 13 on deep balls,
mm-hmm.
There's only one guy who had all four of those receptions, A.J. Green. They took plenty of shots with Sanu deep, didn't get it done, took shots with Eifert. Including probably one Eifert shouldn't have been listed as the official target that was basically airmailed.
Yeah, no, the Ravens defensive secondary was the official target on that. I mean,
yes, I mean the jet stream caught that, and basically James Igbinogu,
mm-hmm.
which thank goodness we don't have to spell that name again until week 17.
Worst name ever.
Basically was fielding it like a pop fly at next door at Oriole Park at Camden Yards.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think Andy gave those guys plenty of opportunities in the first three quarters, and then in the fourth quarter is like, AJ's got to win this game.
Yeah. That I think that's where it can be a problem. But rather than hear us talk about it, I want to, as it seems like we do almost every time, but he's just so darn good, and it's great to hear his perspective on the offense, which is, as we've said, is the polarizing topic of this team and that will likely end up deciding their fate by the end of this year. And so bring in Jay Gruden, who we talked to for 25 minutes today. I was able to whittle it down to about 10 here for you, of him talking about Andy Dalton, talking about the philosophy of this offense going forward and some of the frustrations from the last 2 weeks, and particularly the game against Baltimore. Here's Jay Gruden with reporters today.
Is that the offense, Jay, is that the offense as equivalent of an onside kick? You can't really practice or simulate that?
Yeah, you can't practice it. You know, you have your set of rules where you're going to meet at, and then you're going to go up for the ball, and people are, if you can't get it, you try to bat it up, and hopefully something happens, really. Marvin did a hell of a job. He ran in there, and he's the one that really jumped up in there and tipped it. And then AJ kind of got grabbed, and he kind of stopped, and the ball just popped up to him. So it was a fluke. Unfortunately, that's how we had to score. But forced into overtime, and that's about it from the excitement standpoint.
And considering that drive didn't go well up until that point.
So on a two-minute drive?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it didn't go well at all. And, you know, you have a few set of rules in a two-minute drill. You know, you got to hurry up and get to the line, and you try to avoid sacks at all costs, and we took two on that drive, you know. And can't take a sack in that period. They're rushing good. You know, they have two very good edge rushers, and they're getting pushed. And they did a nice job, you know. Hats off to Baltimore. And live and learn. Just got to move on.
Is that kind of the thing now? I mean, as well as you guys were in October, the past mm-hmm. two haven't gone like you expected. Just, hey, move on.
Yeah, you have to. There's no doubt about it. You know, the fact of the matter is we're still 6-4, and we're in front of the division, so that's what you have to look at from a positive standpoint. From a coaching standpoint, you have to figure out why we're turning the ball over so much. You know, we've had 6 or 7 in the last 2 weeks, and our defense is playing good enough to win these games, and we just can't give away points, and we've given away too many points. And we just have to understand it's okay to punt every now and then. You know, it's a tough league. It's windy out there, and they got a good, strong defense. And, you know, we had a couple good shots at some runs, a couple good looks at passes, but the three turnovers are something we just got to stay away from.
They all the quarterback?
You know, I think a couple of them just got away from them. You know, I think it was really windy. Two of them were against the wind, and they just got away from them. And up, and the first one was up and up, and wind took it, sailed really, which would have been a slight overthrow, turned into be a major overthrow on one of them. And
that was the one to Eifert.
The one to Eifert, yeah. And then the one to AJ was similar type deal. He threw a little bit earlier before AJ was ready, and you know, just sailed on him, got stuck up there in that wind and floated. So, you know, two unfortunate things, you know, just, you know, just got to move on and hopefully coach him up better.
Some would say that might be a sign, you know, they're always talking about being able to cut the wind. Flacco, they say, can cut the wind.
How many picks he throw?
Two or three.
He can cut the wind too good, I guess. Yeah. Had nothing to do with his arm strength, really. Just a couple of errant throws. One of them, he was trying to, you know, give it to Tyler in a certain location. Just sail on him. You know.
I mean, both QBs yesterday won't exactly show up on a Tom Emanski instructional video.
Yeah, I mean, I looked around the league, and other than Drew Brees, I think a lot of teams were struggling. Kaepernick struggled. Cam Newton struggled a little bit.
He struggled for the last month.
Tony Romo struggled. So there's been a lot of struggles, you know. But you're playing a 16-game season against a different defense every week. They give you different problems, and it's, you know, different game plan, so to speak, against different fronts and coverages and looks, pressure, coverages. You're going to have your struggles. You're not going to put Hall of Fame career numbers up every week, unless you're a Hall of Famer.
Well, so, it looks like you might have a receiver that's certainly making a great early case for Canton.
Yeah, you know, he's a special guy, you know, but, you know, I think even AJ will tell you first thing that there's certain things that he has to improve upon, you know. Obviously, the sky's the limit for AJ. He's got all the talent in the world, but I don't think there's anybody in that room downstairs today, including myself, that can say they don't need to work on something, you know, something in that game. There's flaws in all of our performance, play calling and routes and all that, and we'll continue to coach him and move on, but the big thing is we can't beat ourselves up over losing on the road to Miami on a short week and then to Baltimore. You know, it's not easy to win on the road. I mean, I don't think anybody really thought that we'd walk in there and kick their ass by 30. You know, this is going to be a grind. You know, these guys are, they got a lot of Super Bowl champion players on their team, and their backs were against the wall, and they were going to give us everything they did, and they did. They were prepared. They were coached well. They challenged our receivers. They challenged our quarterback in the pass rush. They stymied the run, so to speak. We had a couple of good hits, but overall, you know, you have to give credit where credit's due. Instead of saying we played terrible, I think they played very well. And we just failed to make some plays. We had some drops. We had some missed throws. We had some, you know, tough breaks. You know, that's just football the way it is. You know, referee call here and there, it could change the course of the game. You know, it's just, things got to fall right, and then still, when it's all said and done, we're in overtime with the ball, 4th and 2, going in, and a chance to win the game, and I call a shoot play. Didn't work.
How much of that, though, too, was Gio trying to recreate or deja vu?
I think Gio had to do it. It's 4th and 2, and they played it nicely. The safety was standing right there, and we couldn't get out to him, and unfortunately, he had to make something happen because he would have got tackled for a loss anyway. So he had to try to cut it back. And
did somebody miss the safety? Was that Andre's guy all the way, or was somebody?
No, it was just it was a unique deal, man. It was just a screen pass that we called, and you know, like a lot of screens, we called it for a certain look, and knew we were going to get some kind of man to man, and we did. But unfortunately, it didn't work out the way we hoped. Was great on the chalkboard, I'll tell you that.
Well, you get the screen worked for a touchdown.
That screen for touchdown. We had two other good screens that worked pretty well, and two screens. I mean, that's just the way screens are. You know, it's just on 4th and 2, you just like to give your team a little bit more of an option. But
what could have been a better option, I guess.
We have 468 plays in the playbook we could have called. You know, anytime a play doesn't work, you know, you always second guess, but at the time, we all thought that that was the best play for us. And it just didn't work out.
Is that the one? Is that the one you thought about last night when you were hit the rack?
Oh, there's no doubt. You know, you think about that one, and you think about a lot. You know, but anytime you lose, it'll go back to five or six plays that you called that you wish you had back. This game had to be happened to be about 10 to 15, so maybe 20, maybe 30. But, you know, we can just continue to coach our guys up, stay positive, stay upbeat, because, you know, told our team in a meeting today, you know, there's eight teams in the NFL right now that can say they're in first place in the division. We're one of them. And, you know, if I tell y'all before the season, after 10 games, we're 6-4 and game and a half in front in the division, would you take it? And yeah, we'd take it. We haven't played great last 2 weeks offensively. The 4 or 5 weeks before that, we played very well. Our numbers are up yard-wise this year. I think we're 7th or 8th in the league in the NFL. Our turnovers are up for whatever reason, and that's the one thing that we really have to address is turnovers.
What do you think it is, Coach?
I don't know. Combination. It's not one thing, you know. Had a sack force fumble last week. We had a couple errant throws last week, a couple here and there. The balls that got away from them. Guys made good plays on defense. Maybe it's a receiver not coming out of a break. It's a combination of a lot of things when you have turnovers, unfortunately, because if it was one thing, we'd fix it right away. We'd plug it up and move on. But it's a combination, so we just have to continue to coach our concepts, like I said, and not dwell on the negative. You know, we're doing too many good things to really start to try to handcuff our quarterback or our offense and say, okay, let's pull back and let's play more conservative.
And I mean, here's the thing. They're 8th in the league in total offense.
Right.
They're 5th in defense. But we expect a top 5, top 6 in defense. They're 8th in the league in offense. They're on track to break that 5-year run of 20th or worse. Andy Dalton leads the league in pass attempts.
Which is not necessarily...
Right.
Passes per game is 38.3, which is actually 6th, to be fair.
Okay.
But the point is the same. But the point is exactly
the same.
Yeah,
in 2 weeks,
it levels out.
He's
still throwing a crap load of passes.
Yes. Which, when he gets to that 40 number, you start to do the, oh, lordy, lordy, lordy.
Yes.
Oh, lordy. Continuing the theme.
Yeah, that's like our that's their second Lordy reference.
Yes. It's not good. Well, unless you're facing Pittsburgh, which it seems like on 40 plus attempts he does pretty well. And I think the October run he did okay. Okay, Buffalo he threw it 40 times, so that was a win. But 42 attempts against Cleveland, worst offensive performance of the year. 45 against Pittsburgh, dreadful first half. But rebounded. 40 against Buffalo, a lot of short passes. Completion percentage, I think he's tied for 4th in the league, which I think is pretty good. But those interceptions, the sacks, and the thing to me, the last 3 weeks, he's regressed to that. He was doing a good job the first 5-6 games of the year, not taking the bad sack, throwing the ball away, doing that. He's regressed again. Which is the frustrating thing,
yeah.
and it almost bit him big time in the final drive against Baltimore, where, you know, there were to probably be a lot of people looking for new TVs today if that drive ended like let's face it frankly it should have.
Yeah, I mean, like it does 99% of the time.
Yes,
you know, you're exactly right about all of that. And Andy should be judged at the end of the season, but what I think the worst case scenario coming out of October was that was just another hot streak. That October just proved to be another run of 3 to 4 games, and then you go back into the valley again with him. You saw it last year during the hot stretch with the Giants game and the Oakland game and all that, and you said, oh, that's the guy that you want, but that's not. He's not there consistently enough. And whether that is contingent on too much pressure in his face, that if the line doesn't protect him, it all falls apart, which you see against the better defenses, which has been, you know, his issue in the past, or whatever it is. There's some reason that it's happening, and he's got to find a way to get over it, because unlike any other player outside of probably Colin Kaepernick, who is the ultimate gauge for if San Francisco wins or loses, Andy Dalton is going to be the reason why they win or lose. And so there is a way to look at this, as Jay talked about. He says, I'm not going to get more conservative with this offense because we're doing too many good things. But should they? Does this need to get to the point where you're running the ball more, or you're much safer in what you're doing in order to avoid those turnovers and take less of the emphasis on Andy winning games, and maybe some of the other players are the guys that should be more responsible for wins and losses on this team?
When your quality running percentage between your two running backs is 45%, and you know me, God knows I love
quality
to run the ball.
Yes.
And to run the ball. But
yes,
the one thing I do measure is the quality run quotient, which, for those who don't know it, first down, if you get 40% of to-go yardage or more, that's a quality rush. Second down, half of the to-go yardage or a first down. Third down, you get the first. And fourth down, you get the first. And any touchdown's a quality rush. I think it's a pretty good metric.
Yeah.
Because if you go, you get a four-yard run on first and 10, that's a quality run.
Yeah.
Geo, I think, now is around 45.5%. Benny's around 45.1%. And for all these people who go, well, Geo should get more touches, quality run quotient's not there. And you can go, he can explode and score at any time. We all get that. But he's not going to explode and score at any time if he's getting 25 to 30 touches in a game. Not as a rookie.
Yeah.
And if you want the cautionary tale, you saw it in Ray Rice on Sunday.
Exactly. Don't wear him. And Benny serves his purpose. And I think what you saw, you did see, though, at the end of that Baltimore game, you know, as it got down to the end, those last quarter and a half, it was all Gio.
But we saw that against Green Bay.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
If you want to save him for crunch time or more towards crunch time, that's fine, as long as you're not beating him down those first three quarters as well.
Right.
I mean, I'd personally like to see Gio a little bit more involved, particularly on the edges. I mean, the lack of getting him to the edges enough. And maybe it's, you know, we don't know. We don't know as much about what Jay and Andy know about what they're seeing out there. But maybe teams are, when they see Gio in there, are guarding the edges a little bit more and forcing him inside. Maybe that's
the key. Baltimore has some good edge guys, too.
Yes. But they have been unable to get him in space enough,
yeah.
I think, in my opinion. They've had trouble with it, and they've got to get creative somehow. That's on Jay to find some kind of way to get creative and get him out in space, because they're just not doing enough with him. But because the touches topic came up with Jay this past week as well.
And again, said, with Marvin.
Yes, of course, as it always does. Who, you know, Jay was saying, you know, he probably deserves more touches. But it's not in the cards right now. And there's a lot of touches to go around to everybody, and it makes no sense beating a guy up in week 10. You know what? When it's a playoff game, I'm pretty sure you're going to see about 80 to 90% Geo out there, and that's fine. But at right now, at this point in the season, there's no reason to run him out there and get him crushed, especially when he's nursing bruised ribs as it is.
Yeah, and just to amend something off that Jay quote from last week, because a couple people, when I think I ran the exact long-winded quote, saw a phrase of Jermaine is, quote-unquote, bitching about not getting the ball. And
yeah,
people kind of raised their eyebrows about that. And I think you know and I know with Jay, he can use some colorful language at times, and that could be anyone. Yes, Jermaine is type A. Yes, he's a little more vocal, well, not around us, but maybe vocal in the offensive room. It wasn't bitching as in
complaining.
Yes.
No.
Unhappy. It's the other way around. However, I will say about Germain being inactive on Sunday that, to me, that's another eye-opener that when you talk about extensions and stuff, and a guy who looked like he ran all the routes and everything.
Yeah, we saw him out there pregame running around. He looked good.
This is a big division game. You got to toughen up. And the fact that he wasn't out there kind of now, you know, it goes into the last year of his contract next year. Is this one of those where they keep reevaluating and going,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's just another piece in the are we sure about Germain bucket.
Yeah.
You know, that's all it is. It's not going to decide the whole thing at all, but it's one of those things where you're out there able to run around. And people, I heard some before the game, a little Twitter chatter about, oh, well, you know, save him. It's not that big of a deal. Save him for late in the season. No saving. This is a absolutely essential two-game stretch where you have a chance to absolutely stomp out what is, in most people's opinion, and probably this team's opinion, the most serious contender to them winning the division. And you just breathed life back into the Super Bowl champions by not winning that game. That was a huge game. And to contend otherwise, I think, is wrong. Even if it is, you know, we're not even to the back quadrant. We're not even coming down the quarter pole. But, hey, listen, whatever. If you're close, you go. And he looked close.
Well, and the thing that jumps out to me, and I mentioned this a couple times during the week, is it was an exact same repeat of the game 2 years ago at Seattle, where everybody thought he was going to go, and all indications were leaning that way. In fact, going into that game, he was probable on the injury report.
Right.
Which probable's official definition is 75%. The league office, especially if it's a starter, looks at it like a 95%.
Yeah.
And he went out, did the workouts and everything, looked like he was going to be set to go, all of a sudden didn't go, which I know caused it caused a fair amount of angst around here. And this, to me,
especially,
looks like a repeat.
Especially, he was basically given the probable tag by Marvin on Friday to you when he called him partly sunny. We know that by AccuReady 5000 that is a very, over time, has been Marvin's way of saying probable.
But
how many times we heard that?
But also on that one, AccuReady 5000 said hedge your bets based on 2 years ago.
Right. Absolutely. But the fact that Marvin viewed him before the game as partly sunny, and he comes out there and runs around, he's wearing full speed a go route in front of us and appeared to be, I mean, we don't know. Maybe he was laboring through it. Maybe he is.
He was grimacing a little bit, but that's one of those, you know what? You might not be able to go the whole game. You might go only 10 to 15 snaps, but you got seven receivers. You can sit one down to get a guy for 10 to 15 snaps.
Ryan Whalen played five plays.
Yeah, and the fact that he didn't go.
Yeah.
Kind of, you get those doubts again. And the fans do not give a lot of leeway to Germain.
He could have gone out there as a decoy, pretty much, which he, you know, and they could have still focused their attention on Eifert, be out there as a decoy, running a few routes, do a little bit of blocking, whatever. I mean, and you know what? It's for us to sit here, we don't know. We really don't.
We're not doctors.
We're just going by what we see.
Yes.
When you see a guy running at pretty much full speed and doing a full workout with everybody else before the game, you can't help but wonder. And especially when his coach was pretty much giving him a stamp of approval on Friday, but wonder what exactly is going on there. And I think that'll be an interesting topic when it does come up in the offseason. But we're not in the offseason. We are still in this season, so we have to look forward to now. I know you're a big fan of the Battle of Ohio, Joe. We may have our most important Battle of Ohio game since the Reagan administration, almost. We're at least at Bush 1.
Bush 1. In fact, I was a freshman at Wheeling Jesuit College.
Oh, yes, the Jesuits.
Yep, the parental units, Reedy, still talking about that year in
Mama Reedy four in a row? Is that a Mama Reedy shout out?
Did we give Mama Reedy a shout out last week?
Oh yeah.
Oh, four in a row.
Oh, always. Well, but so this is
parental units, by the way, in a couple weeks might be at Cincinnati.com's Beyond the Stripes with Paul Dockerty, presented by JosephAuto.com, since they'll be here the week of Thanksgiving.
How about that? Well, that, let's see. So we've got, just so we update everyone, Tuesday night, Moorline Lager House, 7 o'clock. Dane Sonzenbacher will be in the house with us, which we haven't even gotten into last week's Beyond the Stripes yet here. And how we've made it this far in without at least briefly getting into you taking a snap off the face from Clark Harris in what is one of the most epic videos ever on Cincinnati.com. Joe, I did in the blog the next day, we'll open with an apology. I was very forceful in telling Clark to fire that snap at you, and I was not expecting it to be that close. I thought it would be more of a regulation punt distance. You were saying, I mean, they didn't have enough room, and you ended up about 8 yards behind Clark, and that thing came out buzzing. And it, sure enough, just the sound of it, though, you hear the thap on the face, and then the gasp of the crowd, then the crash of the glass breaking at Moorline Lager House.
Thank goodness it wasn't one of the windows, or else yeah. we would be doing Beyond the Stripes in a parking lot or something.
Or
this
from
week.
The dish tank.
Yes.
Yeah. They put us to work. But yeah, just an absolutely epic. If you haven't seen the video, I highly recommend it. It's still up, I'm sure, somewhere.
You realize how many Twitter people and people I blocked wanted to snap that football directly at my face.
Yeah, any haters that were there were certainly feeling free to voice their opinion. Although, and I want to say connected, next week, so the first bye week show, coming on our show at Moorline Lager House, Marvin Lewis. He committed right after the Clark Harris incident, which makes me wonder if he heard, wait, we're allowed to buzz footballs off of Reedy's face? I'm in. Sign me up. When can I show up? Because Marvin Lewis, if anybody would like to get down and snap one, I'm sure it would be Marv.
Oh, yeah, to to say the least. But, yeah, we mentioned the idea about Clark snapping the football, and who was the first person in line saying, I'll do it?
You were.
Yep.
And we credit you. We credit you. You were a team player. You took the hit graciously and took one of my favorite photos ever with you and Clark afterwards with your face still red from the football. Clark was apologetic, but it was one of those that I could not stop laughing at. The next day, I would just, whenever it popped back into my head, I would just start laughing again. Now, you know, in retrospect, knowing that you were okay, of course. But it was a funny moment. So
which maybe the folks at Avis realized that I took the football off of the face, which judging by the rental car this weekend.
Ooh, the all-American rental car, the black Ford Mustang. Turn that baby on in the low rumble. It was the most impressive rental car ever, without a doubt. You know what? You opened it up a little bit. You were not afraid to open it up a little bit once we hit the highway, especially yes. Especially on the way to the hotel. Whew, that was the best rental car ever, no doubt about that.
Yes, except for when Katy Perry was on there for about 10 seconds.
No, I quickly hit the button. We would not listen to Katy Perry on there. We had to go directly to the classic. We found the classic rock station, because if you're driving a Ford Mustang on a beautiful fall day in Baltimore, you got to listen to classic rock. We were motoring, you know?
Yep.
But anyway, so the big boo game coming up, the big battle of Ohio in a game that if the Bengals cannot pull this one out.
It's down to a half game.
Half game to the bye week with the Browns hosting the Steelers, who are still sort of hanging around on the back end of this picture. Don't quite forget about them yet with another win this weekend.
And the Ravens got Chicago this week and the Jets the following week.
Things could get a Chicago team with Cutler very much up in the air after getting injured coming back this past week. things could get very, very interesting. You're facing the very real prospect, if they cannot win this game, that you will be tied for the division lead going into the final month, and that wild card is no gimme, and there's a pretty good chance it might not come out of this division.
Yeah.
I mean, at least one of them won't come out of this division. Kansas City or Denver is going to be the 5 seed.
Yeah, and I think the South is still enough of a train wreck that it won't happen there, but the East, who knows. Browns have not swept the Boo, Battle of Ohio, which we call around here the Boo, since 2002, the last year of one Charles Edward LeBeau. So the Browns haven't swept since Marvin's been here, but their first two-game winning streak in the Boo in quite a long time, too.
Yep. It'll be a fun one. We, of course, will be back here with you on the podcast next Tuesday. As we mentioned, make sure you come down to the Logger House. Come down, check us out, Beyond the Stripes.
Come on, say hello to us, and you know what?
Phrase that pays?
Just, you know, yeah, let's you know, if you want to, just come up and say hello to us and say we're big fans of the podcast and we'll buy you a beer.
Absolutely. We love people that love the podcast.
Not only this week, but next week with Marvin, if you've listened to it. And
yeah.
If you're the first, or you know, Paul will buy you a round, I'll buy you a round.
Yeah, yeah, we'll make it happen.
You know, Paul will buy one round for one lucky fan, I'll buy a round for another one.
There we go. And it ends there, though.
Yeah, it ends there.
We're not paid that well, but hey, we love people that love the podcast. We love putting it on for you. So keep
except for that person who called me a Dom DeLuise lookalike.
I think it was more of a facial thing than it was of an actual body. Because you have no.
I'm half the size of Dom DeLuise.
I think Dom DeLuise could eat you.
Yes.
I mean, you're that's not. But yeah, that was a funny review. But it was only in the face. I think you're taking it to you're worried about it too much. I don't think no one's claiming you actually look like Dom DeLuise in full body, but a little bit in the face. When he had the goatee, I could see a little bit in the eyes and the face a little bit. Yeah, just a little bit.
Child, please.
So, yeah, we'll be here every Tuesday, of course, on the podcast. Make sure you check us out. And we'll keep it coming to you every week through the end of the season. But for now, we got to get out of here because we're done. We've wrapped it up, and we'll have more for you next week. But, you know, it's been the Holy Podcast. You've mentioned Lordy about 3 times now. We had all the hallelujahs and the Hail Mary. And someone pointed out in a very delightful letter to the editor this week that the Hail Mary is technically not an act of desperation. It is an act of faith. But
obviously this guy doesn't watch a lot of sports.
Yes, Hail Mary has been long. It just called the name of this play. So let's not get specific, but he pointed out if you listened to Schubert's Ave Maria by Luciano Pavarotti, that you would understand that it is truly a song of faith. So thank you, Pavarotti, for joining us here. Take us out in the only proper way that our holiest of podcasts can go out. God bless you. Amen. Good night, everybody.
God bless us, everyone.
Maria, gratia plena.